This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, it is Friday before Christmas. A couple of days left for you to go out there and find the special gift you're looking for. So you need to get things dialed in if you're on course to do that. Meanwhile, without any doubt, the Berlin terror suspect has been killed in a shootout with police in Italy. And the Italian police say, without any doubt, it is the suspect from that horrendous attack in Berlin a couple of days ago when he drove a big rig, an 18-wheeler, into the crowd at a Christmas market in downtown Berlin across from a giant church. People just trying to celebrate Christmas, and 12 dead, 50 injured, including two Americans there injured. Anas Amri, killed by Italian police when he was stopped and questioned, and he tried to pull a gun from his backpack, and that was the end of that party. If you'd like to join the conversation, 888-900-9966. Matt checking in today. Matt, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, Steve. I wanted to say that they're talking about separating Trump from his business so much, the liberals, but yet these congressmen and senators have insider trading. They dump their stocks in the housing market. Harry Reid builds a bridge to a land that he owns and an earmark. This goes on and on with them.
Yeah, it goes on. Course, it's a double standard. It's an absolute double standard. Always has been. Harry Reid, I mean, he got himself very, very wealthy. Again, you look at how wealthy the Clintons got, you know, worth some estimates $300 million between Bill and Hillary. Of course, they're not worth as much now because, you know, by losing the election, their speaking engagements aren't worth what they might well have been if Bill had continued on the speaking path. But certainly it's a double standard, and it's something that should be, you know, continuously evaluate, Republicans and Democrats alike, making too much money off their alleged public service, Matt.
Well, I agree. I think the Democrats are so desperate, they might even call Trump Russian because he named his child Ivanka. It sounds Russian. You know, they're so desperate. I've seen it. I've watched them.
Yeah. All right, well, I got to run, Matt. Greatly appreciate it. The hotline number here is 888-900-9966. Merry Christmas to you, Matt. Thanks for calling in, and Merry Christmas to all of you. No question. Here's something for you that's a little bit surprising, I guess, and I'm a little surprised by it, but Hillary Clinton and top aide Uma Abedin spent at least 5 hours together yesterday for the very first time that anybody's aware of since the losing presidential election. The pair chatted. Abedin spent time at Clinton's office in the Midtown neighborhood of New York City. They spent 5 hours inside the office before Abedin and another woman came out carrying a box of documents. That lengthy meeting came in the week of an uncomfortable reminder of the final crisis to hit the Clinton campaign and Uma's role in it, the unsealing of an FBI search warrant looking for secret emails and Abedin's estranged husband, Anthony Weiner, the guy who sent inappropriate pictures to a high school sophomore. Mm-hmm. Clinton and her husband Bill now blaming James Comey of the FBI for stirring that all up and into the campaign 11 days before the election. But it also indicates that maybe Clinton staffers who said they don't give a hoot, being polite here, about Abedin after the election loss, maybe Hillary and Uma are mending fences, I suppose. Maybe they're finally, you know, putting that behind them and moving forward. They've been together for years and years. Since Bill Clinton was president, actually. Meanwhile, the communications team announced by President-elect Donald Trump on Thursday shows that the status quo is actually shifting at the White House press shop and other corners of the incoming administration as well. The structure of the team is changing from the past administrations in order to address the needs of the first Twitter president, if you will. Previous White House communication staffs have been hierarchical. Trump's four key appointees will each be an assistant to the president as well as having more specific job titles. Sean Spicer, leading this team, the Republican National Committee's chief strategist for the last 6 years, will take over the mantle of White House press secretary, while campaign communications advisor Jason Miller, who you've seen on TV for the last month and a half, will become the White House communications director. So they're very much together. Also on the team, Hope Hicks. She's the woman that we always work through to get the, you know, the interviews with Donald Trump and others. Hope Hicks will be on the team. Dan Scavino will be on the team. So we know Hope because she's the one that, well, that Ivy works through to get the interviews and so on and so forth. The hotline still open, 888-900-9966. Philip checking in from Flint today, listening to WFNT 1470. Philip, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. I didn't hear the first hour of the program, so you may have already talked about it. But, it, you know, being one of the free people countries of the world, it sure sounded like Obama and his people tried to throw Israel under the bus the other day. And I was just really, like, if I understand what they're saying, that's, like, super offensive to do that to your friends.
Well, let's remind ourselves here, Philip. Hold on. Let's remind ourselves here that this is the same president that suggested out in the open that Israel should return to its 1967 borders. You know, this is a country that was attacked, for anybody that doesn't know.
Like, when I served in the military, I used to fly to Israel to do things for our service people and stuff. And I just can't. I mean, is Barack Obama not an American anymore? That's, like, freaking crazy.
To throw Israel at, well, he has not had, in my estimation, Barack Obama has not been a very close friend to the Israelis from day one. He's tried to be friends with the Egyptians. How'd that work? He tried to do things in Syria. How'd that work? His loyalty, his friendship, his support, his loyalty to, you know, to Israel has been, I'd say, questionable is a fair way to put it. I think, is that a fair way to put it, Philip? It's been very suspect, maybe. All right, Philip, greatly appreciate you checking in. 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966, suspect to say the least. You can join the conversation. You know, you're welcome to join the conversation at any time. 888-900-9966, the number to call in. And I mean, come on, this is a president, Barack Obama, who said, you know, in public that Israel should return to its 1967 borders after that nation was attacked by its neighbors. Israel was attacked by its neighbors in 1967. And then it went out and it won the war quickly, handily. And to the victors go the spoils. Isn't that the way it works? To the victor goes the spoils. And, you know, so there's a close relationship developing between Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. I would expect that to continue and probably to grow stronger. Certainly after Donald Trump finally gets a chance to actually be the commander-in-chief. 14 after. I'm the Steve
Business Gerber owners.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
In a white room with black curtains near the station. Black roof country.
All right, let's get to the hotlines. Jennifer's got a couple of comments before we get to our next guest. Jennifer, what's on your mind?
I'll try to be brief. Thank you, your station, for allowing us to speak out. This president, the sitting president, has played golf 300 times since he's been in office. Compare that to Donald Trump, who is accepting, what, $1 a year to be the president of this country and take on this horrid mess. Has anybody ever checked into the amount of money that the Obamas have cost the taxpayers of the United States for their vacations? I know they've had between 31 and more. I don't know. But I'd like to know whether we're going to get another $8 million bill for this vacation. And I'll let you go.
Good chance, Jennifer. All right, my friend. As always, thank you for checking in. Golf today, though, Donald Trump seems to be... overshadowing Barack Obama at every turn. And even today, when it comes to golf, Donald Trump is going to play with Tiger Woods. So even when he plays golf on rare occasion, he wins. My next guest, Stacy on the right. Stacy Washington, member of the National Advisory Council of the Project 21 Black Leadership Network. Stacy, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure. Always glad to have you here, especially in the Christmas season. But I want to talk about Jeff Sessions because we haven't heard much about Jeff Sessions, the senator from Alabama, tabbed to be the new attorney general for the United States. A lot of nasty things were said about Mr. Sessions, that he was racist and all of these things, going back to a mid-'80s fight for him to be a judge. What do you make, as an African-American woman, of Attorney General Jeff Sessions as a possibility?
Well, I mean, he crushed the KKK in Alabama and pushed for the prosecution of a man who was a KKK member and a radical who killed a black child. And he stayed with that prosecution even when it was politically a non-starter for him personally. And he saw it through to the end, and he secured that judgment that broke the back of the KKK down there. So, I mean, I think it's regardless of what.
Now, hold on, Stacey. And this is pretty well public knowledge. I mean, this is not some, case that's been hidden from the public. This is public knowledge. Why does the left refuse to acknowledge what's out there in front of everybody?
Well, that's pretty par for the course. We have the same thing happening repeatedly with these stories of almost every topic. You even have, look at the treatment of Kellyanne Conway. She's the first woman to run a successful presidential campaign, yet the National Organization for Women and all these other places, they don't acknowledge that she's accomplished this amazing feat.
The national news media doesn't even give a nod to Kellyanne Conway. Can you imagine if a woman had run Hillary Clinton's campaign and she had won? That person would be on the cover of Time magazine.
Well, why didn't a woman run Hillary Clinton's campaign? The question.
Well, fine question. But my point is Kellyanne Conway gets ignored, snubbed. I mean, it's quite an accomplishment. I don't care if you're a man or a woman. It's an accomplishment. She ran the campaign, an underdog campaign, and blew away expectations and won.
True. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you look, as you look at these selections then to the President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet, give me a grade overall. What do you think?
I see a lot of diversity. There's every ethnicity almost represented, but more than that, I see the qualifications. I'm not interested in identity politics. We've been preached to about what kind of body parts we have and what color our skin is and all of these things. We've been told over and over again that that's what matters. What I'd like to see is people who are eminently qualified going into these positions and doing the work that they're paid to do on behalf of the American people. And this should be regardless of their characteristics. The fact is, he's finding amazing people who just happen to, some of them, be black, women, Hispanic, et cetera, et cetera.
We are with Stacy Washington. Stacy on the right, if you will. And let me ask you this, and it's a bit of identity politics, but I can't help it. But in speaking to Oprah in her exit interview, if you will, Michelle Obama says now she understands what it's like to be hopeless and have this hopelessness in America. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, there's only hope in America if your husband's president, because that was the first time in her life she was proud to be an American, apparently. And now she's hopeless because his handpicked successor didn't win. It's kind of insulting, isn't it?
Well, it's only insulting if you actually believe that her husband did a great job. I don't think he did. Now, I love the historicity of what's happened. I love the fact that we have that under our belts as Americans, a country that once had slavery. We now have had a black president, black attorney generals, blacks in every area of public life, CEOs, entrepreneurs, everything. Anything is achievable in this country, regardless of race. And I think her comments, the outgoing comments that provide a peek into what her outlook is on this country. Let's face it, if you are in the wealth category that she is in, you are not affected by who is president of the United States. You have an army of CPAs to protect your money from taxation. You have private security, so you're not worried about crime.
you live in a neighborhood that's wealthy and your taxes are high, but you don't care because you can afford it. And so it doesn't really matter to her who the president is, and I think it's wrong of her to come out and make statements that would depress others who don't really know what he's going to do once he's actually inaugurated.
It is, and when I say insulting, I think it's insulting to the American people too. You know, this whole idea that somehow part of the reason that Donald Trump, in fact, a major portion of his winning was based on, you know, white supremacy and the Ku Klux Klan and other such nonsensical rot. It makes me, well, it upsets me, Stacey. I'm going to give you 30 seconds for the last word and maybe a hopeful word as you set your eyes on January the 20th, 2017.
Well, I'm on my way into the studio to go on Fox Business and talk about this terrorist who just last night was killed by police in Italy. And I think I'm hopeful about our borders being secured, about us having a real immigration policy again after 8 years of nothing. And I'm excited about the prospect. So it's time to say Merry Christmas and enjoy ourselves.
And Merry Christmas to you, Stacey Washington. You can find her apparently on Fox Business here in the next few minutes. You can also find her, Stacey on the Right show as well. Stacey, always a pleasure. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Merry Christmas. It's Steve Gruber at 25 after on this Friday headed towards Christmas. Megan Barth will be here to entertain us for a few moments.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
It is Free for All Friday, and glad to have you here on the program with us. 33 after the hour. The hotline number will remain open for the remainder of the day. Anything you want to comment on, the best Christmas wishes, the best Christmas gifts, what you look forward to in 2017, so much more this Friday of Christmas week. Let's be honest. A lot of things out there to look forward to 2017. And Christmas for a lot of you came on the 8th of November or maybe the early morning hours of the 9th. Let's just be honest about that. For Kellyanne Conway, a new job for 2017. Of course, she is the woman that led Donald Trump to victory. She's the one that led that campaign. And as we were talking about there with Stacey just moments ago, if she had been on Hillary Clinton's campaign team, she would be on the cover of magazines, on the speaking tour. She would be everywhere. But because she, being the first woman to lead a major party candidate and led him to victory from the underdog position, she is ignored for the most part as far as getting praise from. I mean, they're not praising Kellyanne Conway on The View. All right? I mean, they're not out there saying, we love her. No, but she does have a new job. President-elect Donald Trump taps his former campaign manager as a counselor to the president. She's going to be one of a group of people in there now, like Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conway and others. She took a moment to speak to CNN about her new position yesterday. It's clip 8, Kellyanne Conway on her new job. Go.
Well, the portfolio will be whatever the president wants it to be, but it is likely to include communications and is likely to include data and strategy. But the rest will be up to him. I'm just really pleased and frankly very humbled, Chris, to take on this role in the West Wing near the president and to be supportive of the senior team that he already has in place, colleagues of mine that I've worked together very closely with throughout the campaign and the transition. And I think it's incredibly important to be a cohesive team of counselors and advisors who very much believe in this man's agenda and know he's going to do many great things very quickly as president.
Well, and there it is. Kellyanne Conway, the first woman to lead a successful presidential campaign. Obviously, if she had been a Democrat or leading a Democratic campaign, she would be, she'd be getting ticker tape parades and, be the grand marshal of parades and all over the place in the covers of magazines. But she was with Donald Trump, and therefore she will not be featured on The View anytime soon. My next guest, Megan Barth, my good friend from ReaganBaby.com, checking in. Megan, welcome to it.
Well, thank you. Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you, my friend. Kellyanne Conway, if she had been a Democrat, she'd be like, they'd be building statues and so forth. But because she was Donald Trump's point person, winner that she is, she's largely ignored by the mainstream media. I don't think Whoopi and the girls are going to call her over anytime soon.
No, no. And if they do, they'll call her every name in the book, and as they've done with Trump. And this is the problem with feminists. They're so incredibly hypocritical. Vile, yes. Hypocritical, absolutely. Because Kellyanne Conway made history. Absolutely made history as the first female who brought a president to over the finish line. Right? No question.
And did it very from an underdog position. I mean, she joined in mid-August. There's no question. His campaign in mid-August was in a bit of a flat spin. And she pulled him out of the spin, got wind under those wings, and sailed away to history.
Yeah, absolutely. And he must have made her a deal she couldn't refuse because she's moving her whole family and four kids to Washington, D.C. And really, when you think about the Trump campaign, she was the voice of it. And she was that classy, you know, mellow, strong voice. And she pulled him out of a lot of trouble. And people like her. You know, you just like her. You can't help but like her. She's got that voice. You know, she seems like a nice woman. But she,
you know what I like about her?
But that's why feminists hate her.
Well,
she's not ugly,
certainly.
Overweight,
but what I like
miserable.
About her is when she is attacked, she is so graceful when she is completely under attack, and then she will turn and fillet people so swiftly, so effectively, that they don't even realize that they have been filleted sometimes. I mean, the hit is so perfect, and they don't feel the pain until all of a sudden they realize, you know, they've been, you know, they've had their shorts dropped in front of the whole gym class.
Right, because She doesn't turn into a shrieking mess. She simply uses the same tone, the same cadence, and you're right. She just kind of, like, she commits Harry Carey, and you don't even know you've been disemboweled.
Now let's talk. Well, there you go. Exactly, disemboweled. Lovely term for a Friday morning before Christmas. But here, let's talk about another. Well, nothing like that says 'tis the season. But speaking of women and being shrill. Michelle Obama now says that she understands what it's like to have this hopelessness. Now, this is the same woman, of course, who, after her husband was elected, said, for the first time in my adult life, I'm proud to be an American. And now that her husband's no longer president, apparently she's not proud to be an American anymore. Apparently the only way she can feel hope or be proud is if Barack Obama or his handpicked successor were in the White House. Otherwise, apparently she's not interested.
Right. Well, what I love about that statement is, she says, now we know what, you know, having no hope feels like. You're absolutely right, Michelle. The Marxists lost. The Marxists have no hope. And they have lost now for at least the next, I would say, 30 years. Why? Because all the BS that your husband put us through is going to be, like, repealed, replaced, or just completely removed.
We have to unravel the entire mess.
Hold on, Steve. Yeah, and then the Supreme Court is going to be stocked with Federalists who aren't going to put up with the 56 different types of genders, okay? And then who goes to what bathroom? It's so confusing now, right?
But hear me on this, though. Here's the thing. It's going to take a lot of unwinding and deprogramming, if you will. Take, for example, what happened on JetBlue yesterday, where the man and his husband, with a baby in their arms, screaming at Ivanka Trump, you know, how dare her, because her father is destroying America. Her father isn't even president, you idiots. But this is what we're up against.
Yeah, and they're raising their adopted child that they got from a heterosexual couple who they hate. I just don't understand the militant gaze. Without heterosexuals, you wouldn't be able to adopt. Okay? So stop blaming the heterosexuals for your unhinged homosexuality craziness, okay? And Donald Trump.
But we're talking about the liberal agenda in general. I mean, it's the liberal agenda in general that we have to unwind because it's being taught to school kids and college kids, and Michelle Obama's point of view and these two gentlemen, I use the term loosely, on the airplane attacking Ivanka Trump and her family because they're flying JetBlue. You should be on a private jet. Like, that has anything to do with it. It's baffling and bizarre.
Right, and what great role models they are for not only their kids, but let's abuse a woman in front of her children. That just sounds brilliant. This is the future, America. This is the future. But the problem is, Steve, you're right. The indoctrination starts early. We've got a bunch of millennials following around Bernie Sanders like he was, you know, at Woodstock. It's a problem, but the Supreme Court is going to be stuck with federal. And so we can
the trajectory
the
is changing.
There, correct.
Now hold your thought right there. Megan Barth from ReaganBaby.com joining us on the 23rd of December as we head toward Christmas. And she's my Christmas gift to you to end the show program and the program today. So hold on, Megan. We're going to do a little bit more with you right after the break right here on the Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
Friday of Christmas week. Now, I know for a lot of you, you truly feel that Christmas came early on the 8th of November, more accurately on the early morning of November 9th, when Pennsylvania got called and the party was over. You know, just for fun, Megan, I went back here yesterday and tuned up the Young Turks and some of the other great meltdowns from early on November the 9th. It doesn't get old to me. I still find that greatly entertaining. I sat there and chuckled. Ivy and I both laughing. Look at those idiots.
The more we go off the rails, the harder I laugh. Isn't it great? Is that bad? Yeah.
Entertaining. The look on their faces. A couple of them when their mouths drop open. And Martha Raddatz. I mean, she wasn't getting emotional. Yeah. She was. She was almost crying on national television because her candidate, trust me, her candidate was losing. And it was just good fun.
Yeah. What was best about this primary and this election is the press was exposed, completely exposed to be the propaganda arm of the DNC. So all of our suspicions were confirmed through WikiLeaks. Thank you, WikiLeaks.
Yeah, no question.
Christmas came early.
All right, so yesterday several things happened, but one of the more notable developments, and it comes in 140 characters at a time, Donald Trump reasserting his support, his loyalty to Israel, and his friend, who relations are strengthening even now, Benjamin Netanyahu. This is important after 8 years of a president who had said, you know, Israel should go back to its 1967 borders, and, you know, our support of Israel was, I'd say, very much in question. It doesn't seem to be in question any longer.
No, not at all, especially since we're going to move, we're going to obviously support Israel, which we haven't done in about 8 years, and we're going to move, is it the embassy back to Jerusalem, I think it is? Is that what he said? Something like that.
That's what they're talking about, yeah, which would change the whole the two-state solution, which has been American policy for some time, but we've never really gotten there, and people are all up in arms, but people. Listen, the two-state solution, have we ever actually gotten there? The answer is no, we've never actually gotten there. So if it's not working and we can't seem to get there, maybe we should try something different. What an idea.
Jeez. Yeah, what a great idea.
I know it's crazy talk.
Right. This is the same thing with the One China policy. Everyone's like, I can't believe he's poking the bear. I can't believe that he took a call from Taiwan. We have been operating under a One China policy since 1979. Okay, what does that mean? Who created that policy? Jimmy Carter. Why are we following the foreign policy of Jimmy Carter?
Good question. I can find no credible answer to that question. None. I have no credible answer to that question because Jimmy Carter was and might still be, it's hard to say, he might still be the worst president of my lifetime, but I'm going to have to do some reflecting on that to determine if that's still true. But he was weak, and he was an embarrassment. Him in his silly little sweater telling us to turn down the thermostat because we were going to run out of oil in 10 years. Yeah, Jimmy, look, we ran right out of this stuff, except that we have more now than we've ever had. And I could go on example after example after example of how failed he was as a leader.
Well, look, when he overthrew the Shah, that's when we started getting problems. Okay, that's when the Islamists rose to power. And that's when we started getting problems. But beyond that, Donald Trump taking the call from Taiwan, I mean, I thought that the left was going to have a nuclear meltdown. But we do need to take a look at the treaties and the policies that we've had in place for decades And if they're not working, for example, one China policy, then we change it. We move the cards. We create a new strategy. And we keep these people, our enemies, on their heels instead of running ramshod all over us. And we've just kind of allowed it.
Well,
I believe that Barack Obama is the worst president because I don't remember Reagan having such an incredible mess on his hands. I mean, yes, he did. Of course, he had the economy and he had the Middle East crisis. However, this time the enemy is much different. Barack Obama is emptying our jails. He's basically spreading gasoline around in the next 28 days, and he's just going to throw a match behind his back on his way out of the White House.
You know, I don't think it's going to work, though. Like several things that he's doing. Yes, he's letting a lot of people coming in. He's done more commutations and forgiveness of sentences of criminals and so forth. And I understand all that. He's tried to block any exploration of oil in the Arctic and off the Atlantic, off the eastern seaboard of the Atlantic. Most of that stuff will not hold, however, because some of it's done in such flimsy ways. You know, he gave this advice, do it through Congress, as if to say, don't use executive orders. And people took that as, you know, kind of an affront to Trump, but it's true. Mr. Trump, please go through Congress, put these things in concrete, and so you don't get overturned, because he's going to go through in the first few days, a vast majority of Barack Obama's executive orders will no longer exist because he took the shortcut. He took the easy way. He didn't do the hard work of getting things through Congress, which I hope Donald Trump certainly will.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was watching Newt Gingrich the other day, and I can't remember who he was talking to, but he basically said that Barack Obama's legacy is going to be completely undone in the first 100 days. And that's exactly what he was referring to as far as just basically repealing all of the executive orders that would withstand a court, right? And it is obviously outside of the role of Congress. So, yeah, I don't want Donald Trump to act like Barack Obama. I want him to use the balance of powers afforded to him by the Constitution.
The one thing that might still be standing after the first 100 days, though, is Obamacare, just because it might not be feasible to find a replacement program or something different in 100 days. We'll have to watch that one closely and see where it ends up. But, you know, we'll find out. Anyhow, we're headed to a very promising new year. I'm excited about it.
Yes.
Christmas is 2 days away, and so I want to say Merry Christmas to you, Megan.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you and Ivy and Alex. And then Alex educated me on the Epiphany that it's January 6th, and it's something that they celebrate, and I love that. So Merry Christmas, Happy Epiphany, and Happy New Year.
There you go. Megan Barth from ReaganBaby.com. We'll talk to you very soon.
Very good. Thanks, Steve. Thanks so much for everything this year.
52 after the hour. It's the Steve Gruber Show. Greatly appreciate Megan Barth every time she's here. We'll be right back with some final thoughts on the Steve Gruber Show.